Prime time is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. His city, his house. No one beats him in his house. Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports. Now on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Thursday, March 26, 2015. Tick, 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 tick. Almost the end of March. It's Primetime Sports on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks, the nation's most listened to sports talk show. It's Bob McCown, Stephen Brunt in our Toronto studios. A little lineup change. Unfortunately, Gibby's feeling a little under the weather today, so he will not join us. John Gibbons, the manager of the Blue Jays, which is unfortunate because I wanted to talk to him a bit about the Delabar decision. A suitable replacement in the interim, Joe Siddle, will join us. Gibby will be with us on Monday of next week, assuming whatever he has isn't fatal. And we assume it's not.
Yeah, we can assume that, I think.
Also, Gravis Vasquez will join us apparently in studio today, which is nice. He had a great first half last night. Second half, not so good for him and the team. And then Masai Ujiri, the president of basketball ops and general manager of the Raptors, will join us, see if he's nervous about the performance of his team the last little while. I'll tell you, I'm nervous. And then Colby Armstrong, also later on in the program. This Raptor team is not playing the same way. They're not doing the same things. I'm having a hard time putting my finger on it, but it's not going well right now, and it hasn't for some time now.
No, it's gone almost half a season. It hasn't gone well.
Yeah,
you know, that may just be reality settling in, don't you think? You know, and obviously with Lowry being first worn out and then being sat out, which is the right thing to do. But I'm not saying it was a mirage, but if you look at the last half of last year, the beginning of this year, there's a stretch in there where they played extraordinarily well. But I just think that there's been a leveling here, don't you? I wish I knew the answer.
Yeah, you're asking me to comment on what it is, and I don't know what it is. I watch carefully. I think I have a pretty good understanding of the game. There's just a whole bunch of things that don't seem to be working well. I think a lot of this is, they obviously want to win. They're trying to win. But when you do that in basketball, there's a tendency to be more of an individual rather than a team. And I think players are trying to do too much as individuals. And I think DeRozan is a key example of that. He is not passing the ball as often. He is taking many difficult shots. His agenda seems to be get to the foul line. And we like that in a general sense. But not all the time. And he puts himself in position where he can't make shots. Lowry, when he's playing, has been doing the same kind of thing, getting himself in positions where he runs out of options. I don't know the answer. And I'm not talking about the defensive end, because defensively they're terrible.
Yeah.
But they've been terrible most of the year. In the early part of the year, they'd outscore people.
Yeah, correct.
And I've always been of the opinion, Brunt, that do what you do best. You can't take a bunch of guys who can score and make them a great defensive team, and you can't take a bunch of guys who are great defensive players and turn them into offensive superstars. You take what you have, and you adjust accordingly.
Yeah.
And I wonder whether, as much as I love the coach of this team, whether the emphasis on defense has been fruitless.
Well, it's,
I understand you got to teach it. Yeah. I understand you got to talk about it. But I'd rather you said, look, if we can win by scoring 115 to 120 a night, well, let's win that way.
Yeah, I'm not sure they're going to beat good teams doing that. But
they can't beat good teams playing the way they're playing.
No, but look, this team is going to still end up winning 50 games this season, right?
It seems sort of unlikely at this point, but mathematically.
So, you know, if you'd said going into the season this team was going to win 50 games.
I said they'd win 52.
Yeah, so that's a good year, though, right?
If
you flip-flop the year, and if they were hot as a pistol now and they've been cold starting out, then you would feel completely differently about those 50 games.
Of course I would. Of course I would. Because they're going to play around 500 basketball or less in the last, 40, 50 games of the season.
Yep. But I kind of think maybe that's what they are, and that
they might be.
And where they are on the curve, this is more of an accurate reflection of where they are on the curve in terms of, becoming a team that can challenge for a championship. That this is they play an extraordinarily weak division. They have a lot more easy nights than certainly teams in the West do, this year will be viewed as a positive. I think even if they get beaten in the first round, which is certainly not out of the question. I still think this will be an evolutionary step for this franchise. I know everybody's saying they got to win around, or they're spinning their wheels.
That's just to appease fans, so you can say, well, we did a little bit better this year.
But once Cleveland, Atlanta runs away, Cleveland gets their act together, Chicago gets healthier. When did people stop believing they were going to win? They could win two rounds. That was quite a while ago.
Right. Yeah, and I don't think anybody thought that the Toronto Raptors at the beginning of the year would win the division or even contend.
Yeah, so
the fact is they were on top for a long period of time.
Yep. Yeah, so it would be interesting to get Masai on, taking the long view, because that's what the general manager has to do.
Right.
Where are you? And I think there were times I still think this year will be seen as a net positive no matter how it ends. I think it's kind of important for people, because this is not, they're not on the edge of something. They're not on the verge. They're a little ways from the verge.
Well, and we've all acknowledged that they're a couple of players away. This starting five is not the lineup you expect to have 2 years from now or 3 years from now, when you hope that they've matured and evolved sufficiently to be able to contend. And I guess I, like anybody else, in watching this team early in the year, I started to get to the point where I was starting to believe, well, maybe this group is good enough. Maybe they've got it together. Maybe the confidence of that next five off the bench, who haven't been as good either as the first five, but they've been better than the first five.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm somewhat disheartened now by the way this team has played the last little while, and concerned. And here's what I know. I understand that if you lose to Washington, if you play Washington in the first round and you lose to Washington, so what?
Yep.
But I think the fan base will be far more disappointed than you or I.
You're probably right, although there have been weeks for this literally to sink in, right? Weeks for that possibility to sink in that, maybe that what we're seeing now is the real kind of litmus test that this is what they are and this is where they are. And that means that they could go into a playoff series against a Milwaukee or against a Washington, quite possibly lose, and that they would go into any playoff series against a Chicago or a Cleveland or an Atlanta and certainly lose. So, but they're a playoff team. They're potentially a 50-win team. And there are holes to be filled, and there are guys who still have to evolve. And, Kyle Lowry's got to be 100% healthy and playing max effort. That's a big part of what happened at the beginning of the season is that, he was – He was 100% every night and playing incredibly well. Once he started to wear down and couldn't do that anymore, then you start to see the flaws in a different way.
Well, and we all know. I mean, we just experienced earlier this week Steve Nash's news conference, and we know what his physical problems were, and they revolved almost entirely around his back.
Yeah,
and he had a bad back for a long period of time. Now, I had a bad back for 20 years. And it had nothing to do with athletics. So I know how debilitating it can be. And any time, there's no injury that concerns me more than a back injury, because they are almost impossible to come back from. Once you've got it, you almost always will have it.
Yeah, it's going to pop back up at some point.
It will plague you. Now, maybe not like Steve. I mean, we can all remember the pictures of Nash. He'd play his ass off for 8 or 10 minutes, and then he'd go to the bench and he'd lie down in front of the bench.
Yeah, and you're seeing it
with him. He couldn't even sit there.
You're seeing it with Adam Lind.
It goes to Milwaukee, and
he's been sidelined at least once this spring with back issues. Once you have back issues,
it's really hard to get rid of them.
It's hard to get rid of them completely. Yeah, that's absolutely right.
So we'll talk more about that with Grievous Vasquez. We'll talk about it with Masai Ujiri. That's coming up in a little bit. Then Colby Armstrong with some hockey talk. And Joe Siddle in just a couple of minutes.
The most interesting, I got to say, we're going to talk about spring training. You know, I've spent a lot of time down there this year. And I think this has been the most interesting spring training I have ever covered. I really do.
Even from afar, I would agree.
There's just been more unexpected stuff happening. Not, you know, not kind of holy smokes unexpected stuff, but you know, watching normally the script at the beginning of spring training, you kind of know what it is and say, okay, here are the positions that have to be decided. Here are the jobs that are going to be decided. Got to see if this guy's healthy and if this guy, this young player can make the step. And, you know, it's all kind of gradual. And you know, by the time you get to opening day, that's all been settled. And most days, you know, it's kind of routine. But this is one where, you know, there have been some decisions made and some guys emerge and a team takes shape that is not the team we thought was going to take shape. Like, you know, we talked two and a half weeks ago, I was down there and you said, okay, who's the second baseman? I said, well, it's going to be Meiser Asturas because they're paying him and because he looks like he's healthy and because Devin Travis, they love him, but he's still raw and, you know,
they don't think Goins can hit.
Yeah, and Devin Travis is going to be the starting second baseman now. He is. He's going to get the job. Roberto Osuna, interesting kid, you know, great story, coming off Tommy John, saw him in the fall league. It's, you know, it's interesting that they put him on the major league spring training. You know, he's in the clubhouse, he's on the major league spring training roster, but that's kind of a, just let him have a taste of the majors and then they'll send him down to double A or maybe even high A. He's going to make the team, I think, now. Miguel Castro, $40,000 signing out of the Dominican, great in Vancouver last year in low A. I think he's going to be the closer. I think he's going to be the closer by the 1st of May. You know, stuff, and it's, that's a, you know, and I, I think it's 20, not, I think they're all good olds? Decisions.
Oh, well, look, at I've been promoting the Osuna-Castro duo. I was very worried that one of them would be sent to the minors, and I say, look, I don't care if they're 20 years old. I don't care how much experience they've got. If they're the best pitchers, and they are the best, they've been the best out of the bullpen. They're perfect.
Yep. Give him a shot. Like, what do you got to, you know, well, you got something to lose, but, you know, and
not much.
You know, and the other thing here, Bob, and this is, you know,
because we want to bring Joe.
Yeah, this will be a decision. This will be a discussion we're going to be having all year long, but because you're going to be talking about Gibby's future, Alex Anthopoulos' future. This team is positioned now in terms of, you know, if you're going to be working with a salary cap imposed by ownership and et cetera, et cetera, they could have five starters on this team, all under 25 years old, all controllable. You know, you get a five starters all making less than $1 million a year.
Yeah, you could if you didn't have the two geezers, right?
Yeah, well, the one geezer's gone next year. The Burley's out of contract at the end of this year. Dickey's still pretty affordable for 200 innings. He's still a pretty good deal. But, you know, if you look at that, you look at Pompey in center, you look at Travis at second base, you know, you have a lot of young guys and inexpensive guys, even Donaldson, a relatively inexpensive, controllable guy.
Four or something?
Yeah, after ARB, right? So, yeah. But so you've got...
You got guys.
And you got flexibility, Bob, if they can stay at that payroll number.
Oh, I know.
You can backfill with money.
Joe Siddle joins us now, pinch hitting for John Gibbons, the manager, who's a little under the weather. Did you see Gibby today? Did he look sick to you, Siddle?
Well, you know, the day started off rough, I think, with that demotion of Steve Delabar. I think it caught us all off guard. And, you know, I'm sure as a manager, that never goes over well when you've got to send somebody down. But, Steve, it sounds like we got a rebuild happening. Is that what you're talking about?
No, I don't think it is a rebuild, you know, because... It's exciting because I think those are their best options. And I have every reason to believe that this team's going to be competitive with those guys. So.
I don't think there's one guy in that group that hasn't earned his stripes.
Yep.
Do you, Joe?
Well, I think, you know, you're talking about two 20-year-olds, and a lot of people would right away scoff at you, Bob, and say, well, they're 20 years old, and they were in A-ball last year. Of course they haven't earned their stripes. They got to work their way up the system. But, you know, when you see these kids with your own two eyes, and I don't think I would have the same perspective if I was at home watching on TV even. I mean, on TV it's impressive, but you watch these kids in person and the action on their pitches and how they handle themselves. And, of course, working with Russell Martin behind the plate, it's been a pleasure to watch him handle these young kids. But I'll tell you what, guys, these are two of the best arms in camp, and if Castro and Osuna don't head north, there should be a pretty good reason why, because they flat-out beat people out.
Yeah, well, that's it. You know, and Castro, the fact that he throws strikes, Joe, you know, and I know that's obvious, but it's great that he can throw 100 miles an hour, but he's got that crazy changeup, and the ball's obviously hard for guys to pick up, and he throws strikes.
It's all about that secondary stuff, and I think in watching them both Osuna. He started that game on Sunday, and Castro came in relief. And it, I mean, what a pleasure for people if they're watching, because this really is, and you talk about this, the future right here, but I think the future is almost going to be now, because I think what it is with the secondary stuff, it's one thing to throw 95, 97, but I've caught guys before, but that's all they've got. And guess what? Big league hitters can hit 98 if they know it's coming and you don't have anything else. But these secondary pitches both got sliders and changeups, and they're both very good. So when you start mixing that in, I mean, these kids are asking to throw their secondary pitches. They're asking Martin to put the other fingers down in a 2-1 count. I mean, this is unheard of. That's uncanny for a 20-year-old. So these guys are just so far advanced. I mean, really, they are up here, and I'm pointing up high right now, and a lot of the other guys in camp are down here. That's the biggest difference right now.
You know, and the other thing, Joe, in terms of kind of the perspective here, if Miguel Castro had been dealt last spring as part of a deal for a starter whose name we would have recognized, let's say, you know, during that kind of who's going to be in the rotation thing, we would all say, well, he's an A-ball guy. What the
heck?
Yeah,
nobody knew anything about him.
So these are the guys that would have been dealt. You know, these are the guys they would have had to give up. This kind of, you know, same as they gave up Syndergaard, and they gave up, they gave up Nicolino, they gave up some other guys. These are the guys that they would have had to trade at that point, and I think those trades not made are going to come, you know, are going to come back and be a blessing for this team in the end.
Well, I think it'd be a good thing. We look back at the deadline last year, and I know some players weren't happy about that, not going out and getting somebody. But you have to remember, you're going out to get somebody. But was it one piece they're away from winning? Hard to say. But, you know, these are the pieces now that are still in Blue Jays uniforms. Norris, Sanchez, Stroman, albeit he's going to miss the season, but Hutchinson, and then you look at Castro and Osuna. It's pretty intriguing. And you talked about in a couple of years, can you imagine all five of these kids in the starting rotation? That's incredible.
With Hoffman coming behind him.
Yeah.
And not far behind. Not far behind either.
I heard he was lights out the other day in minor league camp.
Tell me about what you've seen with Travis at second base. You know, he was highly thought of in the Detroit system. I think he was their number one non-major league prospect when the Blue Jays got him. I haven't seen anything from him that suggests he's not your opening day second baseman. Have you?
No, hands down, he's the opening day second baseman, and I'm not saying it because he started slow in camp, and now he's really been swinging the bat well. He's had a rough couple of days recently, but I think he's just an all-around good baseball player. He did come with the offensive second baseman reputation, but I think he's really impressed John Gibbons and the Blue Jays staff with his glove. Made some great plays defensively. He made two spectacular plays the other day in Clearwater against the Phillies. So that's kind of turning out to be a bit of a bonus, but I think it's, you know, it came with a reputation that he flat out hits, and you're starting to see it. And when I say that, I mean, I'm watching the at-bats. I'm watching him take pitches. I'm watching him work counts. And he got beat up a little bit today facing the veteran Cole Hamels, but Hamels carved everybody up. But these are the kinds of things we're going to have to find out. What's going to happen here a month into the season if a Pompey struggles, if a Travis struggles? How are they going to be able to adapt? How are they going to be able to adjust to what the other teams are doing against them? Because that doesn't happen a whole lot in the minor leagues. But how are they going to deal with failure? And it's not that they haven't had failure in the minor leagues, but clearly they were able to overcome failures and be successful to get to the major league level. But now it's that mental game too. Can they adapt? And then, you know, when you start struggling, guys, you start really doubting yourself. And now they're going to doubt, do I belong here at the major league level? Those are the things and the bumps that these kids could experience, and it's probably going to happen. But how do they adapt? How do they adjust? But Travis has shown me everything that he is a pure hitter, and I think he'll be able to do that at the major league level. But time will tell. It's not going to be easy, and I say that about Pompey and center field too. I mean, these guys playing every day in the big leagues is not easy. You have to be a very good hitter, so we'll see if these kids are up for the challenge.
What do you think now in terms of Delabarre being sent down today? You know, I had picked up, you know, he had a very good last outing. He's had some not-so-good outings. I was picking up a fair bit of skepticism about Delabarre organizationally, Joe, the sense that they felt like they were seeing some of the things they saw last year, even though his velocity is back up, that there was some doubt there. You know, maybe not everybody, maybe not John Gibbons, but he was certainly surprised. Other people seem a little surprised that they sent Delabarre down. Were you surprised, and what do you think's happening?
I was surprised that it happened today. When I saw that, I thought at least, you know, here's a candidate that will go right down to the wire, and that's when they're going to make their final decisions. But honestly, the numbers are pretty good. If somebody looked at the numbers of Steve Delabarre in spring training, they would say he's pitching pretty well. But from what I've seen watching him, I see a lot, believe it or not, some of the same Steve Delabarre of last season. I think he needed to come in here and just dominate, and that hasn't quite happened. When I saw the velocity early in camp here, I thought that's a good sign. He's strong, and he's probably more healthy. But you still saw some erratic fastballs. You still saw some splits that were up in the zone. And that's what we saw from Delabarre last year. And he just had to be better. So I understand that he's very upset, and that's great. Hopefully he goes down and figures things out and starts dealing. He comes back. But it's a perfect example. When you talk about Osuna and Castro, right now they're just better pitchers, and I think they can help you more at the big league level right now. And I think we all know there's a sense of urgency right now to win ballgames.
Joe, that's exactly what I was going to say to you, isn't it quite likely that Delabar is a victim of Osuna and Castro's success, and not just success in terms of statistics, but the way they've been pitching. Suddenly Delabar doesn't look as good.
Oh, that's exactly right, Bob. I think, again, watching both Osuna and Castro, their stuff, again, it's off the charts better than anybody in camp. It's amazing, actually. That's how far advanced they are. It's unbelievable to see this out of two 20-year-old kids. But I'll say the same thing about those two. What happens if they're in Camden Yards and they get into a jam? How are they going to react?
Well, sure.
And I think everything we've seen from them, they both seem like really kind of that good demeanor and a pitcher. They've got Martin behind the plate handling them. I think that they are going to be able to handle adversity, but we never know how kids are going to react. And talk about Travis and Pompey, for example. Well, it'll be the same thing with pitchers. They will hit bumps in the road. There's no question. But I think when you want to break camp and head north right now, you said it earlier, you've got to go with your best. And we hear it every year, and it doesn't always happen. But I think this is the year that they had better go with their best, because those games in the first week or two of the season can matter big time when they're chasing something in September.
Now, I'm looking at, so assuming they go with a seven-man pen, I can kind of, you've got Loop, you've got Cecil, you've got Castro, and presumably Osuna. You have Redmond as your long guy swingman, and then you have the guy they got from Milwaukee.
Right?
Yeah, so is that the pen?
I think you're looking for sure. Is that the pen? I think, Cecil and Loop for sure. I'm wondering if Cecil is into that closer's role, and I think as we speak today, that sounds like what's going to happen. Does Gibby want another lefty down there to complement Loop? Barnes is still in camp. Colt Hines, Jeff Francis, those kinds of names. Is one of those guys going to stick with Loop down there? If that's the case, then one of those righties might be in jeopardy. But I would say right now, Castro, Osuna, and Estrada are for sure. Redmond, I think they just love the fact that he can go long. And he can eat up innings for you. And, believe it or not, that is valuable, right? I mean, you have to come into he did a lot of that coming into that 7-1 game in the fourth and go like 3-4 innings for you and really save innings out of your bullpen. So that helps. The only thing I question is whether they're going to go with Osuna, or would they send him down and make him a starter, and then they've got some starter depth. I would take him in the bullpen right now. I think it's a good way for these kids to break in. So we'll see. Interesting. I think the one thing for me is, will they keep an extra lefty, because they'll lose Cecil in terms of situational type lefties. Loop will be the only one down there if he's closing.
Do you think Castro's going to be the closer by the time this season's done?
I'll tell you what, I joked about it the other day. I forget who I was talking to. I said, the way things are going here, I don't want to say I'm not a big fan of Brett Cecil closing. He gets lots of swings at that devastating curveball. It's great, and he pitched out of a lot of tough jams last year. But I'm thinking as a closer, my concern would be how many guys are going to start laying off that pitch, because it's a tough pitch to keep in the strong. And now is he going to be falling behind 1-0, 2-0? He was so good in his role. I wish he could just stay there, and I wish the Blue Jays would have gotten a closer, a big league type closer. So in saying all that, I could see things kind of evolving that way, and you may see Castro closing games maybe earlier than June. Who knows?
Yeah, May 1st is my over-under on that one.
Well, and I think we all respect and like Cecil, and it's a great story. Starter, didn't survive that, gets sent out, comes back, gets a couple miles back on his fastball, gets into the bullpen, and winds up being a real success story there. But he doesn't fit the usual closer criteria. Most closers have a pretty good fastball and one other pitch at least, something devastating that they can throw for strikes and get people out with. He's not that guy. He's not going to blow you away with a 92-mile-an-hour fastball. And that shouldn't make any difference whatsoever. But somehow I've always had a hard time seeing him as a closer. I see him as a setup guy.
Yeah, and there's other people I talk to that are all for it. They think that's a great move. To me, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Cecil and Loop, to me, are just two great lefties to have in your bullpen. I just love the situations they came into, and that's why I'd really like to see a major league closer. It would have been nice if they could have gotten somebody with some major league experience, and I know things cost money, but that's what I would have loved to see come in here to really solidify the back end. And, maybe not, whether it's a Soriano or somebody, maybe not one of the high-priced guys, but somebody to kind of allow these other guys to do the middle inning role. But I think as we sit here today, things can change, though. I mean, hey, even when they head north, things can change. And even in this last week, you never know what happens throughout the course of the next week, 10 days, before opening day. But I think right now with Cecil closing, yeah, I'm a little hesitant. I would think maybe you want another lefty down there with Loop.
Who's going to – have we seen enough? Have you seen enough from Smoke to
– That's a good one.
Suggest that he's going to do the job at first base?
Well, I've seen enough from Smoke that I think you have to give him that chance. I know he hasn't had a great spring, and then he's had a couple, you know, a couple home runs in the one game. He's come around a little bit. I think Justin Smoke, I'm a big fan of these guys. I mean, that have done it. He's had success. There is reason to believe he can have major league success again and hit maybe 20 home runs, especially playing in Toronto, kind of like the Michael Saunders situation. I think for me, he's a no-brainer. He plays a tremendous first base, first of all, and that helps. But I know we're talking offense, and it has to be there. So I think you have to start the season with Justin Smoke right now and at least give him, whether it's a month or a month and a half or 2 months, whatever, but at least that first part of the season to see if he's figured it out. If it doesn't pan out, then you unload him. But I think you have to give him that chance because he's a guy, for me, that might be able to play a great first base, and he might be able to hit 15, 20 home runs in a platoon role, even if it is with Valencia at first base and if Edwin's DHing every day.
I'm less confident than you are in Smoke. I must tell you that.
I'm not sure how confident I am, Bob. I just think that's how I would start the season.
I understand.
Yeah, I think you have to give that opportunity. It could happen. If it doesn't, you move on. But I think to start the season, that's the way you have to go. I'm not overly confident. I agree with you on that because you start wondering, you know, is he done? Has he not figured it out anymore?
Are you comfortable that they do not want Encarnacion at first base?
I think I'm in belief of that, and I don't think it's a bad idea. I mean, he has these little injury issues, and it doesn't help being out in the field for nine innings, especially in Toronto, and I know there's new turf and all that, but, you know, there's something to be said for being a full-time DH, and it's not easy, first of all, so Edwin has to buy into that. From my understanding, though, is he would be all for that, and again, what that does is it probably, for me, gives me a Smoke Valencia platoon at first base. The big thing then, of course, is it alters the catching situation with Navarro still hanging around. But I still think that's the way to go, is Smoke and Valencia at first and Edwin as a full-time DH to start the season.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about the catching. There's another area where I definitely picked up the sense that there's an organizational debate about whether you have to carry Josh Toley. And yeah. I can't see how you can make this roster up with three catchers. I just don't see how it can work.
It doesn't work.
No, there's just too many. That's too many bodies. You need extras in other places. It has to be two catchers. The easy thing to do if a deal is not made for Navarro before the end of camp is you take Martin and Navarro, you put Toley in Buffalo, see how things go, see how Martin handles Dickey and all that. And I know the experiment's ongoing here in spring training. You know what? Martin's doing a good job. I'm just from the other camp. I wish they could find a deal for Navarro to make a move, get something in return, and just have Dickey catch Toley every fifth day and allow Martin to catch the other four guys. He'll be a tremendous asset for those kids. And I just think that's the way to go. I don't want to put my star catcher behind every fifth day with a knuckleball. I think it's a bit of a waste, but I worry about the foul tips. I worry about the tips off the knuckleball glove. It's an oversized glove. You know, Martin's doing an outstanding job. He really is. And can he do it? Probably, absolutely. But I'd just rather not put him in that situation. I don't know if a deal is going to be made for Navarro. And I know Gibby would probably likes to have Navarro around. He's a switch hitter.
He loves his bat.
He provides.
Oh, yeah, I do too.
A lot offensively. And, hey, what if Martin gets hurt? Slot in Navarro until Martin gets back. And even if one of the big boys gets hurt, then you've got maybe Navarro to fall back on in the DH slot or wherever. So it is insurance, of course. But I still think the way to go is with Martin and Toley. That's just me. But we're not sure if a deal is going to be made for Navarro here before the end of camp or not.
Who's won the battle for center field?
Well, you know, Pompey and Pilar have been outstanding. The only good thing here.
Well, yeah, who's won?
That's a tough one. Well, Saunders on the DL, I think they both win.
Well, yeah, for the moment.
Center and Pilar. Yeah, and when Saunders comes back, that's going to be very interesting. I would think you have to kind of give them both that opportunity. Now, Pilar being the right-handed hitter, you probably play some lefties, and maybe whether you platoon them or split time, I'd keep them both up, guys. I think they both can hit. They've got a little pop. They're you know, good at bats, really, overall. I don't know if I can answer the question, who wins right now? They've both been very good, and I really like what I see from both of them. Similar type players. They both run well. They both hit. They play good center field, and they both play the game hard. Like, I really like a lot of the things I've seen. If I had to name one right now and put the other one in AAA, I'll tell you what, I wouldn't want to have to make that decision.
But I keep both of them, and I like having one of those bats on the bench in case I need it in
absolutely
late innings.
But I think I think going back to the beginning of spring, Joe, I think they were leaning towards, but I think it was Pompey's job to lose, you know, and I think Pilar has been terrific this spring. But I really think, again, the decision had almost been made going into spring.
Yeah, and I wouldn't waste any more time with Pilar in AAA, though. I think he's a big leaguer now, and I'm really excited.
I'd keep his bat here,
keep what he might do moving forward.
We got to get out of here. We're out of time. Thanks, pal, for pinch hitting. We appreciate it as always. See you soon.
All right, guys. Sounds good. Take care.
Joe Siddle, the color commentator for Toronto Blue Jays baseball. Of course, you know that. Again, our apologies. We intended to have John Gibbons on. He's feeling under the weather. Gibby has said he'll come on with us on Monday. We're expecting Grievous Vasquez, and apparently we will have Grievous Vasquez when Primetime Sports continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Yes.
Before the hour, I promise you, Grievous Vasquez, I can't deliver. Apparently he's in the building, but who knows where. It's a big building. If they went to the other entrance, it'll take him at least 5 minutes to get over here.
He's pretty quick.
Yeah, but Ryan went to get him. Ryan's not that quick.
I have faith. I have faith in Grievous, and I especially have faith in Ryan.
Do you think they're bringing us shoes?
I think he will bring in some shoes, I believe.
Well, I think he'll bring in shoes, but will he bring shoes for us?
Did he ask for your size?
No.
Well, then probably not.
Did he ask for yours?
Nope.
Why are we having him on then?
I think it's unlikely he's bringing shoes for us. There is a shoe element to this conversation, though. That's what you're saying, correct?
Well, apparently he's promoting this new shoe. I didn't know that till just minutes ago. This is the kind of thing the producers don't tell me because they know I'll snap.
Yes, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing.
Are you going to tell me that he's in the building? We already know he's in the building. We just don't know. We just don't know. Well, that's on the lineup doesn't mean anything. I don't read the lineup. You produce this thing, but it doesn't mean I have to read it. No, you still have to do one, yes. Nice try. In any event, do you want to talk about the Blue Jays?
Well, you talk still about it if you want. You know, we talked about it a fair bit, but
I don't know if there's any other issues here.
Well, it's...
We could go over the same issues.
We could go over the same issues.
You know, left field's going to be Saunders, assuming...
Yeah, it'll be on the DL to start the season. And they want to keep Tolleson... Because Tolleson's out of options, he'll be on the roster opening day, and then they'll try and slip him out of there sometime in the first week of the season. And because generally at that point, rosters are set, and you can maybe get a guy through waivers. So,
right.
That's what's going to happen. Saunders will be backdated on the DL and probably, I don't know if he'll be ready for the homestand in Toronto, but I think pretty close to that.
It's a week on the road before the homestand.
Yes, they go to New York and they go to Baltimore.
Right.
So I would think that's that roster decision. But you know what? There's not a lot of roster decisions now. Although, again, it's a totally different roster than the one we thought we were going to see. You know, Pompey.
Well, at the beginning
Pilar,
of the spring, yes.
Bautista, you know, Saunders. There's your four outfielders. You know, Donaldson, Reyes, Devin Travis, Smoke. Valencia will be on the team because he can do a lot of different things. And he crushes right-handed or crushes left-handed pitching. Two catchers, I assume, and I assume Tolley will be sent down. I just don't think they're going to get value for Deonner Navarro, Bob. You know, and I think that's.
No.
I think they really. You know, Gibby loves him as a hitter. Gibby has described him as the best pure hitter on the team. So, unless you're going to get something for the guy, you could dump his salary, but he's a value. And as Joe suggested, if Russ Martin got hurt, you know, you'd rather have Deonner Navarro as your backup.
Let me ask a dumb question. In the midst of all this, this decision on Navarro, are we keeping him, are we not keeping him? Well, we're going to get rid of him if we can and we can get something in return. Wouldn't it have made some sense to have Navarro catch Dickey?
I don't think they think he's good enough behind the plate to do it. I think that's it. You know, I don't think they think he's as talented enough defensive catcher to handle that. And... You know, I think there's, you know, it's...
But it's spring training. Why not try?
I just don't think they believe it. That's what I'm saying. I just don't think they believe it. And they believe Russ Martin can do it, and he can. You know, Gibby made a really... When I was down with Blair, we had Gibby on, and he made a really interesting argument about how... because I think he kind of wanted to keep Toley and wants to keep Toley.
Gibby does?
Yeah, but because he said, you know.
Well, as a former
one
catcher,
of the, yeah,
too.
But he said one of the things.
He'd like to have 25 catchers.
Well, he said Russ Martin is a great, you know, he's a, one of the things you've got with him is game calling, right? Strategic, you know, he's a great pitch framer, and also he's going to call a great game. With a knuckleballer, neither of those things matters because he's going to throw the knuckleball.
Well, yeah.
All right, so you don't have to call a game. You got to frame the pitch to a degree, but, you know, try framing a knuckleball. So, you know, he's.
His skill set is wasted.
In those 30 R.A. Dickey starts, right? So.
In theory, I see that.
And that's, you know, and he's saying he's going to catch, the guy's going to catch 150 games or 160 games. You know, you might as well, if he's not going to catch 20, or if there's 20 or 30 games he's not going to catch, might as well make those R.A. Dickey games and have Toley catch him. Because, it, you know, he'll be good with the knuckleball. He's going to handle the knuckleball. And then you max out the value of Russ Martin in terms of working with your other pitchers, in terms of calling a game. It's an interesting argument, but I still can't make that roster work with three catchers.
Well, no, and I can't make the roster work with Toley on it. I'm sorry. I mean, I understand he has that skill set, but it, you know, it's one of the things with having a knuckleballer who has his own private caddy, as I've called him before. It means your roster's 24 instead of 25.
Mm-hmm.
And with no disrespect intended to Mr. Toley, he just can't hit well enough to be on my team.
There's a bit of a chicken and egg there, too, because, you know, I think he's a slightly better hitter than he has shown, but if you're only going to catch one guy and you're not going to get a lot of at-bats, you're probably not going to hit.
How are you going to improve?
That's right. Or you're just not going to get comfortable.
Well, no. I mean, I understand it's difficult when you play one day out of every five.
It's a tricky one, but that's kind of, yeah, that has been one kind of, and again, I think there's some interesting, and we talked about this, we talked about, you know, the makeup of the bullpen a little bit. I think there's some interesting, you know, Delabar being sent down today. I think there's some interesting little kind of mini debates going on this spring. You know, you got a manager with his job on the line. You got a general manager, his job's probably on the line. You've got some, you know, are we going to start 20-year-olds? Are we going to, you know, are we going to give the ball to this guy? Are we going to go a safer, more conventional route? What's the best chance we have to win? What is the best 25-man roster we can bring north? This, you know, there's just kind of a different buzz there, Bob, and it's nobody kind of sitting back and saying, well, let's just see how it works. Let's see how it plays out. And we don't need to do that. We'll keep him down and
we'll follow the traditional route, but you can't follow the traditional route.
No one's doing that this year.
But the players have mandated this. We have decided on high. The players have mandated with their performance, this is what we're going to do.
Those jobs have been won. You know, Daniel Norris won a job. You know, Miguel Castro won a job. Those, you know, there's necessity, obviously, with Stroman getting hurt.
Yeah.
But, you know, those guys won the job.
Well.
A man with shoes has arrived.
Let's put baseball talk behind us for the moment. This guy needs no introduction. Here is Raptors point guard. Here's Grievous Vasquez. He brought shoes. Look at you.
How you guys doing?
We're doing great.
Thank you for having me here.
That's nice of you to join us. Before we get to the shoe stuff, rough one last night. You had a good first half. You played well. You got some points. You did all the things I think you wanted to do, and then it got away from you guys in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, we couldn't finish the game. We couldn't close the game. It was a tough loss for us, but we clinched. We're in the playoff. We got another chance to get better tomorrow against the Lakers, and tomorrow is going to be a really good challenge for us to play, to put a 48-minute game where we play hard. We communicate and we play our team defense that, you know, we need to execute. Just be more focused.
What's the biggest difference between the team that was so hot earlier in the season, Gravis, and the team right now?
Well, we're struggling. We're struggling right now. We went through different injuries and we can't. I'm not going to give you guys excuses. We're not going to give excuses. We're struggling. We're going to embrace the struggle. But I believe. You know, a lot of teams would love to be in our position right now. We're going to the playoff. We're going to clinch our division. So a lot of teams are going to go home right after the regular season is over. So, yeah, we still have 10 games to get better. We do have to address this problem we have right now, which is we have to play hard for 48 minutes, and we have to do it defensively and as a team. I mean, it's not so much as an individual. It's just we have to execute or defensive schemes, and in order for us to do that, we have to do it like it's something. You know, playing hard is one thing, but playing hard and playing smart is going to definitely help us to win games.
I said, agree or disagree, I said earlier in the year, you guys won games in early part of the season, got off to a terrific start by playing offense. You didn't play great defense. It didn't matter. You scored a lot of points. I wonder about the theory of hammering on the defense over and over and over again. Is it difficult for a player when you have success playing one way to hear a coach talk to you about something you're not doing as well?
Well, at this point, you're right. It's clear. Like we kind of lost our identity in a way, because last year we were a defensive team.
I understand, you came out and scored a lot of points.
But you don't win like that.
Well, you won a lot like that, though.
At the beginning.
Yeah.
So how, in order for us to win at this time of the season, we can't just outscore teams like that. Like, I don't think the team that's going to win a championship this year is going to be a team that plays defense. And if you like Golden State, and you play your number one defensively and offensively.
Well, that's pretty good.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
You don't hear that very often. So for us, you know, with Coach Casey, we do have to play defense. And last year we did. We hold teams to 96, 98 points a game, and we didn't score as much. But we play in a different style. And I'm not saying our style won't work, but we do have to play different. At this point of the season, we caught a lot of teams off guard during the beginning. Now everybody knows what we're doing. We're missing Kyle Lowry right now, which is the head of the snake. He's our guy. We want him back. So that's a big loss right there. You know, Kyle carries so much on the team for us, and he's a leader. And now DeMar, myself, a lot of guys, Lou has to play the point. So we have to do what we have to do. So at this point, you know what I mean? As a team, I feel like we got to stop. And we can't really hear different opinions.
Right.
We just got to focus on the things that we can control, which is our team, our locker room, our work ethic, and our belief. We got to get that back.
We were running very short on time. We want you to talk a little bit about what you brought in. You brought in a pair of shoes. They're Under Armour shoes.
Yeah,
right?
I'm going to release my shoe on the 28th, Saturday. The Foot Locker store at 2 p.m. Down the square. And I call my shoe the North 6. The North, because we're the North. The 6, because Toronto, Canada. And it represents how much I love the city. How much I'm committed to the city, to our team, like even through good times, bad times, you know, this is really important and a unique opportunity for myself, because this is a dream come true, having my own shoe.
Did you have a role in the design?
Oh, kind of like I have my little input because I was wearing this Clutch Feet Drive during the playoff last year. I tried them out. Now this ones are like the player special edition. So a special edition for myself, and then obviously the team. I have the team colors, and it just went over, and then like the Raptor, right? Like the gray represents the Raptor, and then it's just like it's a way for me to show love to the hospitality, to the support that I have from the city and from our team.
They look good on you, Bob.
It would be a good look for me. North 6, you call it. Goes on sale Saturday, March 28th, available in Toronto at Foot Locker at Yonge and Dundas, and retails for $139.99, so $140. And there's going to be an autograph signing at Foot Locker at 2 p.m. on Saturday with you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'll be there. Are you coming?
Oh, Bob will be there.
I just found out about it, but I'll do my best.
good, cool.
We wish you the best of luck with the shoe situation, but More importantly, perhaps, with the basketball team.
For sure. Hopefully, I don't hope. I think we're going to finish the season strong.
We hope so. Congratulations on this, and thanks a lot for stopping by.
No, thank you.
Great
to
see you. Grievous Vasquez, more Raptor talk when we come back. One of his bosses, Masai Ujiri, the president of basketball ops and general manager of the Raptors, will join us. Colby Armstrong of the NHL on Sportsnet in studio. Primetime Sports continues coast to coast on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.